Hello and welcome to Wattcast. My name is Roger Watson, and these podcasts are dedicated to readings of various articles that I've had published in newspapers and magazines. They reflect my views on politics, the pandemic, and current affairs. Thank you very much for listening. The mad rush for ventilators in the COVID killing fields. This is a co-authored article with Dr. Neil McRae, which appeared in TCW Defending Freedom on the 17th and 18th of April 2023. It was published in two parts. I will read them both together here. You'll end up on a ventilator. That threat was frequently aimed at dissidents in the early months of COVID-19. End is the operative word, as most patients who were put onto the mechanical breathing apparatus lost their lives. Many may have died anyway, but undoubtedly ventilators did more harm than good. As registered nurses, we are concerned by needless iatrogenic deaths in the COVID-19 regime, whether by excessive use of midazolam, cardiovascular harm from vaccines, curtailed access to cancer screening and surgery, or the impact of fear-inducing propaganda. What was the role played by ventilators in the pandemic phenomenon? We've divided this review into how and why. In part one, we consider the dubious clinical rationale and adverse outcomes of such widespread treatment, and in part two, we explore its psychological purposing. It's not a pretty picture. Part one, the clinical carnage. Imagine being admitted to hospital for any reason, and after testing positive for a respiratory virus, being moved to another ward, sedated into semi-consciousness, and hooked up to a mechanical breathing machine. How on earth did you get here? Yet this was a common fate of hospitalised patients admitted in the COVID-19 outbreak in 2020. For too many, it was a silent spring as their last breaths were taken before the tube was passed into their lungs. A ventilator operates by a tube inserted through the mouth, reaching down the windpipe into the lungs, blowing oxygen in and enabling exhalation of carbon dioxide out. The ventilated patient is normally sedated, partly to reduce the stress caused by losing the ability to breathe naturally. In an exchange with TCW editor Kathy Gingell, former Pfizer chief scientist Mike Yaden asserted, "I believe they were sedating, intubating and ventilating people admitted for non-respiratory reasons if they tested positive for COVID. My bottom line is that close to zero people should ever have been ventilated. Did you know that once sedated, unconscious and ventilated, everyone will die in due course? It's a horribly dangerous procedure. When life-saving, like deep surgery or after trauma in a road accident or perhaps a chest wall injury or stabbing in pneumothorax, or if you've an obstructive lung disease and are physically exhausted by the work of breathing, and finally a 50% burn victim in agony, mechanical ventilation may be justified." The equipment is not standard treatment for influenza and pneumonia, a leading cause of death in older people, for whom such intervention would normally be regarded as unnecessary, invasive and costly. Indeed, Yaden doubts whether any patients testing positively for COVID-19 should have been ventilated. The mad rush for ventilators began after the virus reached Italy and then spread across Europe and North America. On March 25th, 2020, the analytics company Global Data estimated that about 10% of the COVID-19 cases worldwide needed ventilators and that 888,000 ventilators would be needed. The company's medical devices analyst, Tina Deng, said ventilator shortage are a crucial reality as the COVID-19 outbreak continues to worsen globally. All ventilator manufacturers have full order books and hold little in stock, receiving orders not only from regular customers such as hospitals, but also directly from governments. Italy became the benchmark for the rest of Europe, but account was not taken of the uniqueness of the Italian health service. Before COVID-19, Italy had considerably higher bed occupancy than in the UK, with similar populations, 60 million for Italy, 68.5 for the UK. The former has 25,000 more beds than the latter, 187,000 for Italy, 162,000 for the UK. In 2019, Italians were admitted to hospital a staggering 58.6 million times, compared with approximately 6 million in the UK. Patients are much more likely to be admitted with high use of intensive care units, ICU, where Italy has 3.1 beds per 1,000 people compared with 2.4 in the UK. At the time of the COVID-19 outbreak, the NHS had 5,000 adult and 900 child ventilators, but at least 30,000 were deemed necessary for the surge in pandemic patients. The government called on major British manufacturers such as Rolls-Royce and Dyson to build ventilators instead of engines and vacuum cleaners. See part two of our articles. In April 2020, the Daily Mail reported data from the Intensive Care National Audit and Research Centre on the first 777 COVID-19 patients treated in 285 ICUs, showing that only 34 of 98 ventilated patients lived to tell the tale. According to the newspaper, volunteers at the hurriedly erected Nightingale Hospital in London were told that 80% of patients on ventilators would die. On April 9th, The Independent reported that some working on the front lines of the coronavirus epidemic are now wondering whether ventilators might do more harm than expected. On the same day, the Daily Mail went almost as far as saying that doctors knew that this intervention was killing people. On April 26th, an NIH preprint reported that mortality rates range from 50 to 97% in those requiring mechanical ventilation. Meanwhile, the US publication Stat Twice and Time both reported warnings by physicians that use of ventilators for COVID-19 patients was misguided. As Kit Knightley remarked in Off Guardian, May 4th, 2020, the overuse of ventilators may actually be killing people who could otherwise have survived. Knightley's detailed article explained why so many patients were dying, including this quote from German pulmonologist Thomas Foschar: "Invasive ventilation is fundamentally bad for patients, even if the ventilator is optimally adjusted and the care is perfect. The treatment brings with it many complications. The lungs are sensitive to two things, excess pressure and excessive oxygen concentration in the air supplied. The terminal failure of the lungs is often caused by too high pressure and too much oxygen. Rather than ameliorating pulmonary infection, ventilators increase the risk. Under sedation, the intubated, ventilated patient's cough reflex is disabled, often leading to fluid accumulation in the lungs. These stagnant pools are prone to bacterial infection, particularly in the microbial culture of a general hospital. Survivors of ventilation are often left with lasting damage. A study published in the American Journal of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene found that mechanical ventilation seriously damages the lungs of COVID-19 patients. After the frenzied quest, ventilators were quietly dropped. According to the BMJ, 60 to 75% of COVID-19 patients admitted to critical care in the UK in April 2020 were subjected to this apparatus. However, according to recent UK government figures for the 7 days leading up to April 6, 2023, only 4% of the same type of patient were ventilated. As Ingrid Torgensen said in the BMJ in January 2021, the pace of the move away from invasive ventilation varies among hospitals and has been driven by greater clinical experience of treating COVID patients, by data associating invasive ventilation with higher mortality. Yet, as we have shown, there was never a good medical rationale for intubating and ventilating patients as a frontline treatment. One ICU nurse we interviewed about the early days of COVID-19 described policy and practice on ventilation as a farce, with no consistency between physicians. But policies must have existed, whether on paper or not. So unsubstantiated anecdotes proliferated in social media of ambulant patients being intubated and ventilated to immobilise them to reduce transmission. A YouTube video by nurse Erin Marie Olszewski featured covertly recorded conversations in the intensive care unit of a New York hospital. It tells the tragic death of a 37-year-old man, admitted with a shortness of breath but otherwise healthy. This case illustrated how patients were regarded by hospital management as throughput, placed on ventilators simply because they had low oxygen level. In the killing fields of New York, more than 80% of ventilator cases died, and according to Olszewski, one person who did not perish saved himself by pulling the tube out. She attributed this radical practice to orders from above and financial incentives from the government. It was literally cash for corpses. Most doctors and nurses who worked through the great pandemic scare of 2020 would be aghast at any implication that they were knowingly terminating lives. As with most aspects of COVID-19, the pandemic response was orchestrated at a higher level, but this does not excuse any clinicians who departed from the Hippocratic Oath to first do no harm. Ventilators killed, but as we shall discuss in part two, they also had a much wider malign effect on society. Part two, ventilators as a psychological tool. Look her in the eyes and tell you never break the rules, exclaimed a billboard posted around the country in spring 2020. Each version depicting a petrified patient with a breathing tube or mask. This was the state of fear documented by Laura Dodsworth in the aftermath of the first lockdown, imposed purportedly to limit the spread of a deadly new coronavirus. To achieve compliance with an unprecedented deprivation of liberties, the government pushed propaganda at every opportunity, inducing fear of the disease and loathing of anyone daring to stray from pandemic discipline. For the regime to work, the people needed to be sufficiently scared. The virus was portrayed as universally life-threatening, with an exaggerated fatality rate in the early weeks, derived from a relatively low number of cases. The reported rate of about 5% declined after mass testing, which reduced the IFR to nearer that of influenza. This inversion was useful in demonstrating the effectiveness of lockdown and social distancing, but the initial message was highly effective. Alongside the seriousness of the contagion was an absence of cure. For a patient who developed severe symptoms, typically drowning in pneumonia, the only chance of survival was to be intubated and to rely on ventilation in the hope of microbial mercy. Nothing invokes public dread more than scenes of multiple patients on ventilators, even better if those working around them are covered in maximally protective clothing and face masks. Rows of patients in ordinary hospital beds would not have had the same effect. Indeed, in some televised recordings, politicians visiting wards were met by stoical Brits, inconveniently chatty or smiling. NHS hospitals became a tightly scripted stage show, as illustrated by nurses doing choreographed TikTok dances, often imploring people to stay at home. And activist Debbie Hicks arrested and later fined almost £1,000 for filming in her local hospital corridors. Ventilator became le mot du jour in conversations with friends and family. This was all part of the theatre. Overwhelmed doctors and nurses, beds in the corridors, hurriedly built Nightingale hospitals, which were never fully opened, and a treatment apparatus that filled minds with fear. Being put in a ventilator may be traumatising. One COVID-19 patient reflecting on it was as the worst experience of her life. The blunt message was that if you wanted to avoid such drastic intervention, you must follow all guidelines and mandates. Through their daily projection in mainstream media, ventilators were a useful tool for compliance with social distancing, lockdown, regular testing and mask wearing. Indeed, we suggest that the deployment of ventilators was primarily for psychological rather than clinical reasons. For many watching the news and television, this machine was as terrifying as a disease. Furthermore, it contributed to the government-desired yearning for a promised vaccine. Mainstream media, controlled by authorities throughout the pseudo-pandemic, contributed to the fear by reporting that one's chances of survival on a ventilator were at best 50-50. As discussed in Part 1, the real odds were only about 1 in 4. Although ventilators aroused fear, their scarcity was also instrumental. As the outbreak reached the UK, people had seen images of chaotic hospitals in Italy and wanted to believe that the wonderful NHS would be better prepared. Instead, they were told by news bulletins that only a fraction of the necessary machines were available. Reckless rule breakers, perceived as tantamount to murderers running amok, were deemed undeserving of such resources. On March 15, 2020, Prime Minister Boris Johnson called on British manufacturing firms to adopt their production lines to making ventilators, with the Department of Health issuing specifications to companies that expressed interest. Yet, despite the appearance of the government going on a war footing, there was no requisitioning, which you would expect if the need was so dire. Dyson designed a new machine, Covent, but decided not to proceed with mass production after COVID-19 cases had passed a peak. Similarly, in the US, the federal government announced a budget of $1 billion for ventilators production, having lined up companies such as General Motors, but only a small fraction of the order was fulfilled. Having failed to achieve its initial target of 18,000 mechanical ventilators by the end of April, the UK government was reportedly making substantial progress towards the later target of 30,000 by the end of June. Although incidence was falling, the authorities were preparing the public for a predicted second wave of the pandemic. Despite the disastrous results and knowing that ultimately supply would vastly outstrip demand, ventilators remained centre stage. Like testing kits and other COVID-19 paraphernalia, ventilator provision was mired in allegations of ministers' conflict of interest and corruption. As reported by Private Eye and Prophets of Doom, thousands of these ventilators went into storage in Ministry of Defence warehouses. Nevertheless, the money for their purchase is stored in the bank accounts of the people who, subject to little scrutiny, supplied them. Ventilators were elevated to a first-line treatment when they should have been a last resort. Their use as an instrument of fear is abhorrent, but worse is the suspicion that such equipment caused death. At the very least, we can say that physicians continue to put COVID-19 patients on ventilators in the knowledge that this would most likely hasten their death. This is quite a charge, but have we not seen enough crimes against humanity over the last 3 years to think the unthinkable?
This podcast was produced in association with youpublicationslimited.com.